Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Grok Radio. The following broadcast is made possible by the friends and partners of CYI Worldwide Ministries and Grok Radio. And the views expressed in this program and by our guests may not necessarily reflect those of CYI Worldwide Ministries or its staff. And now, enjoy the show.
You stand on the shore of the ocean watching the tide come in. You sense the call of the sea beckoning to take you in further. You step forward little by little, not knowing what to expect, but expecting more. You keep going as the ocean calls you to enter in to deeper waters.
Okay, everyone, let's see if we can get this to work. We're still having technical difficulties. John, are you there?
Yes, Nick, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, it's a bit staticky. Are you having some static, too?
Yeah, I'm hearing a little bit of snap, crackle, pop. I can try you back on a different line and see if that changes things. Second, I'll call
you
right back.
You might want to try that.
Okay, let me do that. I'll try to get right back to you.
Listening in here, and I'm thinking the issue might not be him, it might be my connection here. Our guest is John Stewart of Ratio Christi. I'm talking about how Ratio Christi is going international now. And so we'll go back and see. You're on the air.
Nick, the static's still there, but I can hear you.
Okay, it must be my end somehow. So we'll just try and bear with us here as best we can. So we're here today to talk about Ratio Christi and how it's going international. For my listener audience, could you tell them what Ratio Christi is?
Sure, Nick, and welcome to your audience. Ratio Christi, the words in Latin mean the reason of Christ. And that's the title for an apologetic campus alliance. It's primarily university students who attend Ratio Christi meetings. And the meetings are hosted by trained apologists who typically have a graduate degree in apologetics or the equivalent. And the idea is to not only invite Christians who need to be strengthened in their faith, be given information on how they can fulfill the challenge of 1 Peter 3:15 to be ready to give an answer, but also to reach out to the non-Christian who often has misconceptions about what Christianity really does teach. Quite often they've been steeped in secularism. The non-Christians have been subjected to a lot of skepticism at the university level. And Ratio Christi is there to reach out evangelistically to try to let them know that Jesus is indeed Lord. He's a historical person who did die and rise from the dead, and that the Bible is indeed a revelation from God. So Ratio Christi, in essence, is an arm of evangelism on the university campus. And right now in the U.S., perhaps about 100 campuses or so, And now internationally, we're beginning to expand to, we're in the process of setting up chapters of universities in different countries of the world. And the need is there, so we're excited about the opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Now, you say the need is there. What makes you think the need is there? What really is the situation on our college campuses?
Well, I could probably even speak better to international because I've actually taught apologetics in East Africa, West Africa, South Africa, Asia, and Israel. So I've been to those countries, those areas of the world, to the universities, and I see them beginning to suffer some of the effects of Western Europe skepticism, which has infected the United States quite heavily. In some of these other countries, it's not too late to put in a firewall and bring evidence to folks before they are so challenged in their faith as we've seen in America. But in the U.S., the university campus has become the breeding ground for skepticism, agnosticism, and atheism, and some of our prominent atheist thinkers, of course, flourish on those campuses. So what we see, Nick, is the statistics will vary, but it seems as perhaps as high as 50% or more of high school students who enter the university as Christians sometime during their university experience will walk away from their faith. And that is appalling, which means to me that the parents aren't doing a good job teaching their kids evidence for Christianity. And the reason the parents aren't teaching their kids, lest they think I'm picking on the parents, is because the churches aren't teaching the parents. And the reason the churches aren't teaching the parents is because most pastors are ill-equipped to teach their congregations the defense of the faith, the whole area of apologetics and evidence for the Christian faith. And the reason, so that the pastors don't get mad at me, the reason the pastors aren't ready to do this is the seminaries have not been teaching our pastors how to indeed defend the faith intelligently. Well, the good news is now we have five or six universities that are offering graduate degrees in apologetics, and as a result of this, there is an entire movement, and I believe it's a movement of God, where people are being trained to stand up and defend their faith intelligently, and it's making a huge difference on many university campuses where now we have Ratio Christi chapters, where students don't have to hide out and be silent, but they can stand up and advocate for Christ, and they can be in a position to indeed take the offensive instead of merely taking the defensive and trying to defend. And apologetics really has two aspects to it. There is a negative and a positive. The negative is to respond to objections to the Christian faith, but the positive is to just give the evidence as to why we are Christians, the evidence for why we trust the Bible, for why we believe God exists, for why we believe that Jesus Christ rose from the dead.
Yeah, and I know Frank Turek has said that about 80% of students, he thinks, are walking away from the faith in college. And it's not just for rational reasons. There are also, I think, numerous times moral reasons. They get out from under their parents' protection and they start experiencing drugs, alcohol, sex, things like that. And that kind of fuels the rational reasons. But there are so many reasons why. And one statement he's made is that children are talked out of the faith because they're never talked into the faith.
Excellent point. Excellent. In fact, I've actually heard Frank Turek comment on what he would call the elephant in the room, which is morality. So in many cases, it's not an intellectual problem, but they have intellectual excuses to maintain a lifestyle that perhaps their secular friends have induced them to enter into. And, for example, one of my friends, Josh McDowell, was debating talking to a university professor, and he said, look, if I could prove to you beyond a reasonable doubt that Jesus Christ rose from the dead, then would you believe? And the professor said, no. And Josh pointed out, well, you see, your problem is not with your mind. The problem is with your will. It's not that you can't believe. You choose not to believe. And I wonder how many kids on college campuses, as you say, that they have not really received it themselves, but they've been nominally Christian or professing Christians, and then when put to the test, which the university campus can be just that, they are easily led astray. And oftentimes it becomes the intellectual excuse. And that is most unfortunate. So we really have a lot of work to do as parents, as churches, as Christian leadership in his seminaries to equip the 21st century Christian to be able to flourish in an increasingly secular world.
Well, maybe we should start talking about also about how Ratio Christi has been dealing with this. Ratio Christi really started off as a small organization. I think it was just like two campuses had a Ratio Christi chapter, and it grew from there.
Nick, it's been an explosive growth. Yes, in the last two or three years, going from, I'd say, less than a dozen, because it started a few years ago at Appalachia State and then began to spread. And then when Rick Shanker took the reins a few years ago, then we began to see this significant growth. And right now, over 100 campuses in the U.S., many of which have full-time apologists at those universities who are doing ministry to the college students. And I find that really exciting. And one of the appeals that Ratio Christi has been making, and people are hearing this, is if someone does get a graduate degree in theology or especially in apologetics, well, what do you do with that? And a lot of people do want to teach, which is great, and we encourage that. But to put it into practice, the universities are a ripe opportunity. So we have been assisting many of our Ratio Christi campus directors to figure out and learn how they can do enough fundraising so that they can become self-supported missionaries for particular university campuses. And, in fact, I was working on earlier today a PowerPoint that I'm going to be using at a Ratio Christi symposium coming up in North Carolina in a few weeks. And in the process, I'll be talking about, and I guess you're going to hear it first here, Nick, and that is, if you think about the missionary from the 19th and up to the mid-20th century, well, we think of the exotic clothing with the pith helmet, the safari outfit, holding the King James Bible, standing on the deck of the tramp steamer about to sail off to Bunga Bunga, while the ladies from the Missionary Society wave their hankies. You know, that's the stereotype. Well, what did these missionaries actually do? Well, they learned the language. They learned the culture. They figured out how to bring the good news of Jesus Christ to people right where they were, which meant learning things about worldviews and cultures. Well, things have changed, Nick. With people like Hitchens and Dawkins and Sam Harris and the skepticism that's out there, now you don't have to go across the ocean. You barely have to go across the street to find someone who speaks a different secular language, has secular values, has a secular worldview. So my point is that the 21st century missionary is the apologist. That's who we are. We're missionaries to the culture, whether it's in the U.S., or internationally, to bring the gospel where people are. And just like Jesus in John chapter 4 with the woman at the well, she was there for water. He found a common bridge to talk to her, to really get down to the essentials of her spiritual needs, and he used something that was common to them. They were there for water. Well, in the same way, we have to figure out where we can reach the university student to be able to talk to them at their level on their turf, which means understanding secularism better than the secularists do, to be able to bring the gospel to them where they are. So again, the apologist is indeed the 21st century missionary, and whether it's here in the U.S. or whether it's in some other country, our work is cut out for us.
Now, when you have a chapter apologist that are doing work, what are the qualifications the chapter apologist must meet? Because you don't want just anyone leading a chapter at a school, I don't think. You want to make sure they're one of the best ones.
Well, of course, we would like people, the more qualified, the better. What we typically look for is a graduate degree, a master's degree in apologetics, or the equivalent, which could mean a master's degree in theology. Some would see that as the equivalent. But also, Nick, not to rule out people who, in many ways, they cut their teeth on defending the faith. They cut their teeth on evidence for God, the scientific evidence or the historical evidence for the resurrection. But they don't have advanced degrees, but they've spent decades, perhaps, in some cases, learning about defending the faith and how to best reach the secular culture. We don't want to turn away people just because they don't have a graduate degree, So if they have the equivalent in experience as to someone who's been through a 1 or 2 year Master of Arts program, we're interested in talking to those people as well. And we also have opportunities for people who are actually still in school in one of those types of programs to use them as speakers, whether here nationally or as we begin to send apologetic mission teams to other countries. To give them opportunities to give testimonies, perhaps even give some lectures, to speak to church groups, Bible school groups, or even at universities. But, yes, we do like the more qualified, the better, but we need the people who preeminently are called. And most of the people, Nick, who are called to do apologetics are pursuing or have pursued advanced degrees. There are a few who have not. But if their experience is sufficient, we're willing to talk to them as well, because we do want qualified people who are called by the Lord to do that particular ministry.
To give an example of what you're talking about, an example I know very well, when we have a call for donations on the show, which we do once every show, I do mention that one way people can donate to me is through Ratio Christi. Because I'm to have the Issues and Answers chapter, which is a purely internet chapter, I think the only one of its kind. And I don't have a master's yet. That's in the process. For anyone who's interested, I have been accepted at Northwest University in South Africa with New Testament master's. But I think the Ratio Christi team looked at my experience and said, hey, you know enough. So this call, everyone, just because you don't have a master's or a PhD, it doesn't mean you can't be of service through Ratio Christi somehow. I just want to know, do you know your stuff?
Yep. Well said, Nick. I appreciate that. And I can speak from experience, too, that when I came to the Lord, which was a long, long time ago, I was really excited about apologetics. And I'd had one semester of college, actually one quarter. I'd gone to college right out of high school for one reason and one reason only, and that was to play football. When the season was over, I quit school. And then I came to the Lord not too long after that and spent about a year and a half doing, I was in a Christian singing group and doing some teaching, trying to study the scriptures on my own. And then I realized I need to do this more formally. But I was so excited to come to go to my church and hear someone like Walter Martin or Josh McDowell and give reasons for faith. And I saw that that's something that I aspire to. And then I was fortunate to go on and get my bachelor's in biblical studies, and then I got a master's in theological studies. But all the way through there, even before I had my degrees, I'll tell you, I could rattle things off because that was part of my heart's desire. And so like you, Nick, and like so many others, they may not have achieved that advanced degree yet, but people who are in process or have that type of heart and experience and have the means to be able to, as we say, do apologetics, we're really interested in those folks. Those are the ones who are going to make a difference, and it's happening, and we're excited about it.
Yeah, we're going to be talking later on in the show when we give a call about donations, about how these chapter heads raise up funds and such for themselves. But I did write a blog about this yesterday, or actually this morning was, and one statement I think I made was that I think we could very well be on the verge of a golden age of apologetics in the church.
I hadn't thought of it in golden age. What I've heard, and I'll have to think about that because that sounds right, I see it as a movement, and that may be a good rubric to put on it, a good term is the golden age. And so in many ways, we have to look back and we think, wow, the secularization of America, what a tragedy. Well, it may have prepared us for revival, and we're looking for a revival. We're looking for people's hearts to be changed, and apologetics is that species of evangelism that could be bringing in the change. So the golden age, I like that. That could be the last age before the Lord comes back. Who knows? Could usher in the kingdom.
I'm pretty sure that comes from Lee Strobar at Shirley. I think he might have been one who said it first.
Well, that's nice of you to give him attribution, but I heard it from you, Nick, so when I think of that expression, I'll be thinking of you, by the way. So.
And just to make another little plug here, since I did mention Lee Strobar, if anyone's interested, he's going to be on the show on November 30th here.
Oh, good. Yes, he's a great guy. In fact, last year, Mark Middleton, I always forget how his name is pronounced. Middleburg. He has co-written some of the books with Lee Strobel, and they worked together. And he was our Ratio Christi banquet speaker last year, and I knew of him. That was the first time I got a chance to meet him, so it was good to see that. And Lee Strobel's just got a great story. Anybody who's come out of atheism, and like myself, I have a doctorate in law. He has a law degree and was a secular newspaper writer for the Chicago Tribune when he came to the Lord. I don't want to steal his thunder, but some of the books he's written, just a very great contribution to the whole apologetic movement. And he wrote some things that I wish I would have written. It was just exciting to see him interview people and write down their recollections and put it together in his book, you know, The Case for Christ.
Well, we're here with John Stewart of Ratio Christi. I am Nick Peters, and this is the Deeper Waters Podcast. We're going to take our first break, and we'll be back after this.
Join Unituber and Army Girl for Christ as they discuss spiritual warfare, spiritual preparedness, the end times, life issues, and personal and spiritual growth. That's www.truthradionet.com, truthradionet.com.
I can't believe the news today.
You are now in the hidden queue.
We're back with John Stewart. I think he tried to call in on your other line, right? Yeah. Okay. John, are you there?
I can hear you, yes. We're okay. Can you hear me?
Okay, you switched lines. All right. It looks like we've got things taken care of. So we were talking about Lee Strobel and his books and the difference it's made. But before we get to that, I'll just tell people right quick, the call-in number, if you want to call in, it's 714-242-5180. If you want to talk about Ratio Christi, ask about chapters in your area and such. Yeah, I have a really personal debt to Lee Strobel. See, his book, The Case for Christ, I consider the one that lit my fire in apologetics and got me going. And I think I've heard this from a number of other people. And you were talking about the churches failing to equip people. I look back when I was growing up in church and realized that where I was for years, an intellectual Christian, no one ever once said anything to me in years of church about apologetics. I didn't know about it until I got into Bible college. And then when I found out about it in Bible college and started doing it, I just couldn't stop doing it. It runs in my blood now. It's what I do. Isn't this a real disappointment for our church that we've got, I'm sure, several other people who are brilliant in their own ways, or great intellectuals and such, and they're not told what they can do with their minds for Christianity?
Well, Nick, I think that's one of the reasons why the Lord, in his wisdom, has brought this apologetics movement, the Golden Age. I do believe that because Christianity seems to have taken a back seat to secularism in our culture, and media, they've been dominated by secularists, and you look at all the disciplines. As a lawyer, secularism has taken over law, it's taken over politics. It's taken so many.
You lost you.
In the university, can you still hear me?
Yeah, last thing I heard you saying was something about Hollywood, and then you kind of went out.
Oh, yeah. So it seems that secularism has taken over, and so we really do need to make up for lost ground, and we need to get apologists into churches, and we need to train pastors and apologists and Christian leaders to bring the information to the local churches so that Christians can be encouraged and be able to stand up and speak out, whether it's in high school, whether it's in the university, or whether it's just in the public square. And just a few comments here and there can impress people that, you mean there's really evidence? You mean you really can discover truth? You mean we really can trust that God exists and has a plan? All these things that seem to be given today with secularism, we can't assume that our neighbor, who perhaps goes to church, maybe not, even understands what the gospel is. So we have a opportunity to reach out and tell people about God's plan and give them the evidence for why what the Christian faith embraces is indeed true.
You know, I don't know how many times I've read accounts of people who are now ex-Christians and went to their pastors before they apostatized, asked them hard questions, and the pastors didn't even know what to say in response to this. And then I'll call numerous churches around here and say, hey, would you be interested in doing anything with apologetics? Like, no, we don't really need that right now. And if I get back, I keep thinking, you are just fooling yourself if you think apologetics is not needed in the church right now.
Right. Well, there's the battle for the mind continues, and Satan's devices are such that he's had quite a few victories and won a few battles, but we know, fortunately, that we're going to win the war. And the Lord wants to recruit every able-minded, able-bodied Christian to learn as much as we can about the God that we serve who created us, learn the compelling evidence, the great cloud of witnesses, and the things that tell us that indeed the heavens declare the glory of God, that Jesus came to earth, lived and died for our sins, and rose from the dead, and to be able to articulate that to people. And evangelism means the good news. And speaking the good news, well, the good news is that we have evidence, and we don't have to turn off our brains to be a Christian. What we can do is use our brains to discover the overwhelming and compelling truth find as we study the context of the New Testament. Are these documents reliable? Can we trust what it affirms? And the answer is indeed yes. And
hello? John, we lost you again. We seem to be having terrible technical difficulties today. And we're wait a little bit and see if you'll come back on. Well, until I hear from him again, I guess I'll just speak here and say that what he's saying is true. We do have these questions, and they do have answers to them. And so many people in our churches, they're just totally unaware that these answers are out there. They're just going along with their feelings, their emotions, and there's such a deeper life there waiting for them. If they just look at the evidence out there and see what they can find out about Christianity. And our pastors, they just aren't often doing the job. They're not equipping the saints, and even worse, our seminaries many times aren't equipping them, and if they are, they're not equipping them properly. And many times, some Christians will go to seminary and end up apostatizing at seminary because some of the teachings are so incredibly liberal at that point. We definitely can do better, and that is why groups like Ratio Christi exist out there. Ratio Christi exists in the college campus so that students... Oh, here he comes back again.
Don, we lost you there. I thought I was waxing eloquent, and all of a sudden I looked up and we were disconnected. So a few of those technical details. Sorry about that.
Yeah, you were saying something about the New Testament being reliable, and then I had to clear in about that. So go ahead with what your point was.
I should hear what you said. Make sure that I don't repeat that. What I was saying, though, is that all the evidence, and this is an area that I've emphasized for a long, long time, the New Testament documents can be relied upon to give us an accurate rendition of what Jesus of Nazareth said and did. And these are primary source accounts. And so, for example, if we say Jesus is coming back, it's not our wish or merely our hope, it's actually his promise. John chapter 14, I believe what he says because I believe we have an accurate record of his teachings. And unlike the Jesus seminar that I think says 15% of the New Testament words are authentic to Jesus based on their assumptions and subjective evaluations. I think there's great arguments that the entire New Testament is reliable and therefore is a firm basis for faith and for practice.
If anyone wants to hear a case of that, by the way, go back to June, I think it was June 1st this year, when we had Craig Blomberg come on, and he talked about his book, The Reliability of the Gospels, especially. That's where we focus, but that is some of the evidence that's out there.
Yeah, there's a tremendous amount of evidence, and one of the things I'll be talking about in North Carolina at our Ratio Christi Symposium is that the world has become secular in so many ways. We've been infected by Western European secularism. It's come to the U.S., it's in Canada, and it's spread to other countries. If you go back, Nick, to, for example, the 1700s, when Thomas Hobbes, the political theorist, wrote his book Leviathan. Now, if you read that, you would think, gosh, Hobbes sounds like a Christian. Sounds like he's right out of the King James Bible. Well, in fact, most people consider Hobbes to be an atheist. But the only way he could communicate to people in the 17th century was to use the dominant value system of the day, which happened to be Christian. In the 17th century, you had two types of people: Christians, who were living consistent with their beliefs, and Christians who were living inconsistent. So all a preacher had to do was to preach consistency, because everything was coming up Christian. Then by the 18th century, the critical schools in Germany, Tübingen, people like Ferdinand Bauer came up with their theories that John really didn't write the Gospel of John. Whoever wrote the fourth Gospel probably wrote around the year AD 170 or 180, some unknown Jew in Palestine. What was his evidence for that? He had none. His only evidence was his subjective assumption that whoever wrote the Gospel of John, since they called, and the Gospel of John refers to Jesus as God, it could not have been an eyewitness. Therefore, the Apostle John could never have written it, based on his subjective opinion that a first century Jew could never have referred to Jesus as God. So that was his evidence. None. And of course, he wasn't around long enough where in 1934 we discovered a fragment of John's Gospel that dates from around the year AD 115 to 120, P52. And by that time, though, Bauer had infected the thinking and the faith of many people who, based on the so-called assured results of higher criticism, believed that it's questionable as to whether we can really trust the gospel accounts. And then from the skepticism attacking the Bible in the 18th century, then in the 19th century, along comes two people, Nietzsche, who says God is dead, and then Darwin. We no longer need God because we can realize how life evolved from lower forms through a mechanistic process. So the 18th century, the Bible gets attacked. The 19th century, God gets attacked. And then the 20th century, mankind gets attacked. We had the war to end all wars that didn't do it. Then the Nazis. And the 20th century was the worst century in the history of the world for bloodshed. So now here we are, post-Christian, secular-oriented age. And the solution is to turn things back by giving solid information and evidence for why Christianity is true and intellectually feasible. And so that's how we turn the tides, Nick. But secularism has made such great inroads. But notice it starts with the Bible, just like Satan in the garden. Has God really said? And when you question that there is a God who's revealed himself, then the whole idea of God also disappears. And what do we have left? If we have secularism, then we end up with, what, pragmatism, utilitarianism? Well, what's pragmatic to the Nazis was the Jews were of no value, and neither were handicapped people, what we would call handicapped today. Less than able people were exterminated, as were the Jews. This is the legacy of secularism and agnosticism and atheism. So the consequences of a increasingly secular world are dire, but the great hope is the blessed hope we have in Christ. And God is using people like you and me and people at Ratio Christi to turn this around and to regain that ground that has been lost to secularism, to bring the realistic hope in Christ back to people.
I'd add in, not only has mankind been attacked in the 20th century, but morality has especially been attacked. And he writes a book on evil and the justice of God. He states that the behaviors that we considered abhorrent a couple of generations ago, such as adultery and divorce, they're now considered generally acceptable. And he says it doesn't give me much hope considering the way pedophilia is viewed today. And since we're having to deal with abortion and homosexuality by front, tell me that tide is moving, but it's moving in the wrong way if we don't stop it.
Yes, morality is one of the casualties of an increasing secularism, because if you take God out of the picture, Wittgenstein said in his Tractatus that ethics is transcendental. If we can't reach a higher power, then it's moral relativity. And I've seen it as a lawyer firsthand. I and my wife, who's also a lawyer, are both allied attorneys with the Alliance Defending Freedom. And we were both involved in California, the Proposition 8 marriage case, which unfortunately mm-hmm. the Supreme Court punted on recently. But we yeah. had to fight like the Dickens. But still, even in a left-leaning state like California, Proposition 8 was passed. And over 7 million people voted for it. Unfortunately, the morality of one homosexual judge, federal judge in California, and his view trumped 7 million voters. So now we have chaos in California. The people amended the Constitution to say marriage is a man and a woman. Now, if 20 years ago I'd even mentioned that that was an issue as to whether marriage is a man and a woman, people would have said, why don't you talk about something relevant? There's no chance in the world that that's an issue. And we blink, now all of a sudden, how many states? A dozen states allow same-sex marriage, etc. And then you've got the chaos in California. So I've seen it at that level. And the more secularism takes hold, the response, Nick, is, well, why not? What's wrong with two people who love each other just because they happen to be of the same sex? So when we abandon biblical morality, traditional morality, biblical absolutes, what do we end up with? Roe versus Wade. We end up with the whole marriage fracas. And then what's next? And I submit that once you redefine marriage, it's very difficult. This is a logical slippery slope that I think you can say is reasonable, because not all slippery slopes are fallacies. Why then would you limit marriage to two people? Why not three, four, or five? And believe me, I find no cogent argument to stop at two people now that the gay lobby has thrown the door open and allowed marriage to be between two people. Why two? What's so sacrosanct about that? There is nothing sacrosanct in a secular society. So people want it. If their personal expression of morality includes that, then by golly, there you go. And then what's next? I think Justice Scalia anticipated some of this when he wrote his dissenting opinion in the Lawrence versus Texas case in 2003. But what is next? Prostitution? Public nudity? What's wrong? Just because you don't like it, hey, that's no reason to ban it. And that's the age we're living in. And we're sowing to the wind, Nick, and we're reaping the whirlwind. And unfortunately, the casualties have not all yet appeared. People aren't taking this in an alarmist fashion, but I'll tell you, it's really having consequences in society in America, and I hope we can stop this and turn it around and prevent some of this from happening in other countries.
We're definitely going to be firing some shots on this show. I can tell you that in 2 weeks, we've got Robert Gagnon coming on. He's rescheduled him. He's going to come on and talk about his book, The Bible and Homosexual Practice. And right before that, next week, I'm going to be interviewing three people society says doesn't exist. And but what I mean is, I've got three ex-homosexuals coming on to talk about their story. So we're doing what we can here also.
Nick, I am so glad to hear that. In fact, I think September is supposed to be Awareness Month for ex-gays. And might I add, and I know that they're meeting in Washington, D.C. this month. They may have already met, and a lot of the ex-gays who are the forgotten people. So people always will talk about the LGBT, and what I say is you're missing at least one letter, and that's the letter X for former homosexuals. And I happen to have actually had the privilege. I wrote an amicus brief to the California Supreme Court on the Prop 8's predecessor, which was called Prop 22. It was the same issue. Then it was a statute. Prop 8 made it the law of marriage as a man and a woman into the Constitution of California. But before that, it was actually a statute, and people were challenging the statute. So I wrote a friend of the court brief, an amici brief, to the California Supreme Court, and my three clients were three organizations made up of former homosexuals to show, and for those who have any legal training, you'll understand why this is important. One of the criteria as to how you scrutinize a particular law, such as limiting marriage between a man and a woman, is whether or not there is a suspect class, a minority class who's being discriminated against, and if so, you have to use the highest level of scrutiny to justify that law existing. And one of the questions you have to ask about the so-called suspect class, which homosexuals want to be, is do you have unchangeable, called immutable characteristics? For example, race. You can't change the color of your skin. And so I tell people, look, I've met a lot of ex-gays, but never an ex-black or an ex-Hispanic or an ex-Scot. So one of the criteria then would be, is it is this the particular characteristic, is it unchangeable? That's why the gay community does not want to acknowledge the existence of ex-gays, because number one, legally, it gives an argument as to why homosexuals should not be given the highest level of scrutiny when laws may affect them. But number two, it tells them, all of them, you have a choice in this, and you're not born that way. And even though you may have very strong same-sex ideations and desires, and not having those myself, I can't identify with that. But the good news is, even if they have those, they can successfully be celibate, and they can successfully, in many cases, transition into a heterosexual lifestyle. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying many people who have tried have not been successful. It's a struggle, just like heterosexuals have sexual struggles. But God is greater than our problems, and He has grace for us. But let's not redefine marriage to please our secular desires.
We're here with John Stewart of Ratio Christi International. We're going to be back after this break.
It's here, the official Grok Radio mobile app. Listen to your favorite Grok Radio programs on your iPhone, iPad, iPod, Kindle Fire, Android smartphones, and tablets. The best thing is, it's absolutely free. Download it now from the iTunes or Google Play App Store, or get a link at our website, cyiworldwide.com. Grok Radio, Christian radio that doesn't suck.
We're here with John Stewart of Ratio Christi, an international program. The call-in number is 714-242-5180 if you want to ask a question. Now, I've talked to the parents out there. Suppose they've got a boy or a girl they're about to send off to college, and they wanted to know what can be done to keep them safe in college, to give them a good Christian presence. When this student shows up at a Ratio Christi chapter, what can they expect?
First of all, they can expect to be welcomed by people who have similar experiences. Many people have been raised in the church, many people have not. They can also expect that there will be a trained apologist who is the director of that chapter of Ratio Christi, who understands the evidence that supports the Christian faith, so that if these students do have questions, they can come to their chapter director and talk about it. And the leaders, the directors of the campus chapters, can also and do give regular teachings and training so that the students can become even better equipped to be able to respond specifically to the types of challenges, both intellectual and even moral challenges, that they're going to face on the university campus. So this is something that parents ought to be delighted to have. It is an oasis in the desert, secular desert of the university, that can be an intellectual wasteland in many cases. And you have to wonder whether parents even realize that they spend 18 years training their kids on what is right and teaching them what is right, and then they spend a lot of money to send their kids to a place that in 4 years is trying to tear down everything their parents have taught them for 18 years. How do they survive? They survive by having, number one, fellowship with fellow believers who are going through the same struggles. And Ratio Christi chapters have just that, where there's a commonality in the issues they face, both intellectual and moral. And also it's an opportunity to learn, to be able to be ready to respond so that they don't have to be silent in the face of somebody who stands up in a class, be it a professor or a student, and say, well, you can't trust the Bible because of this. You know, maybe they just heard a Bart Ehrman lecture. Now they're parroting that. And Ratio Christi is going to prepare students to be able to respond to that, say, well, excuse me. And by the way, 1 Peter 3:15 and 16 does say with reverence and gentleness, but respectively, trying to say there is a different perspective and you're missing some of the facts here, and let me give a different analysis and let the student stand up and show that there is truth on the side of the Christian. So there is that, as well as if kids have already been straying from their faith and the parents send them to university, the best thing that could happen is for those kids to be roommates with a Ratio Christi attendee, someone who goes to the meetings, knows enough about apologetics to respond to the questioning student or even the skeptical student or the atheist student. And thank God that we have these campus chapters that are growing. But to just turn kids loose at the university with all that's going on intellectually and morally, no wonder parents are leery, and they should be. But thank God for Ratio Christi and those campuses where we have chapters. And then there are other also, Nick, I don't want to leave out other fine Christian ministries, campus ministries out there that do have opportunities for fellowship. You have InterVarsity, you've got Campus Crusade, you've got some of these others that they're doing a good work. Ratio Christi is there to supplement. We focus on the intellectual challenges to the Christian and the skeptic so that we can answer their questions and help them on their faith journey.
Yeah, you all are a parachurch organization. You're not there to support yourselves so much, but you're more than willing to work with other ministries.
Yes, indeed. In fact, and we have many friends, such as Ravi Zacharias International Ministries and Southern Evangelical Seminary does a great work. We're friends with Biola's Master of Arts in Apologetics program and Craig Hazen, what they're doing, and Luther Rice, and some of the other organizations that are out there. Frank Turek, of course, is a friend with his Cross Examined. And there are many organizations that we do our best to work with them. In fact, in many ways, because we are supplemental, I think that in many ways, Ratio Christi is becoming sort of the clearinghouse for apologetic ministry and conferences and all this. And one of the things I've noticed, and by the way, I'm speaking to you from Iowa right now, and not too long ago, the fellow who's the director of Ravi Zacharias International Ministries in Canada came to Iowa to speak at Drake University in Des Moines, and Ravi Zacharias himself was there to answer some questions. And one thing I noticed, and I talked to his people about this, and they're well aware of what Ratio Christi can do, they put on these great events and have great speakers, which is very important. We need to do that. But once they leave town, where do all these kids go that have their questions? They want to connect with fellow believers who are serious about studying the evidence for Christianity. That's where Ratio Christi comes in. We're there. We're there every week having meetings so that when we have big events and people respond to the gospel and to apologetics, we can plug these kids into a place where it's already moving forward with information. And I was on one of these first-hand international teams where we brought in some huge events. We had John Lennox talking and a couple others like Michael Ramsden, Ravi Zacharias at universities in South Africa. And the turnout was amazing. We probably had 2,000 people in an auditorium that seats 1,500. Any possible place you could sit or stand, they were there, and they still turned people away. The hunger is there. Ratio Christi is there to do the follow-up so we can plug these kids in and continue to teach them rather than having once a year or every 6 months have someone come in like a William Lane Craig or whoever and get them all excited and then put it on hold for another 6 months. Ratio Christi gives kids, teenagers, young 20s and people who are at the university opportunities to plug right in, build on that foundation, and get involved in reaching out themselves.
Yeah, I've noticed that you do have very excellent speakers come up into two different talks, for instance, that Gary Habermas gave on the minimal effects approach to resurrection. Even with one of them, he took a question from someone who was obviously a skeptic in the audience.
Well, one of the important things is that when 1 Peter 3:15 says, be ready to give answers. Now, most people don't ask us on an everyday, a daily basis, well, why do you believe in Christ? But they still have questions. So we're going to oftentimes go ahead and give answers, even if they haven't specifically asked the question. But when you have someone who's trained and someone as brilliant as Gary Habermas, for example, who is just the best guy around on the resurrection, I mean, something like that, it's invaluable. But one of the things I would point out is that, and by the way, part of my background is I used to co-host the Bible Answer Man show with the late Walter Martin. So I answered Bible questions across the country for many years and had my own radio program out of Southern California where I did just that. When we answer questions, and I love seeing on YouTube Ravi Zacharias answering questions or Gary Habermas answering questions, there's two aspects to answering questions publicly. One is the person who asks, you're giving them information and you're letting them know that there is evidence to support the Christian perspective. But number two, you're also modeling for everyone else listening how we can approach these questions so that we ourselves can take that information and answer questions that other people are going to have. So when we answer, it goes well beyond just the one person who asks and shows, number one, Christianity has the answers, and number two, here's how I can answer similar questions if I'm ever asked these. And we need those models. We need those types of folks. We need to multiply them. And indeed, that's what the seminaries who teach apologetics now are trying to do. That's what our apologetics conferences are attempting to do, is to be models for how we can take that same information back to our communities, to our universities, to our churches, and show people that we can truly be satisfied intellectually that God has given us answers.
Now, I'd like to go back to something you said earlier about sending our young people off to colleges where they would get 4 years of education designed to destroy the values their parents instilled them with. Do you have any evidences or quotes from these leaders, that these teachers, that show that this is going on? Or is this, I mean, we want to make sure this isn't just how paranoid conspiracies, you know?
Well, when we talk about the university professors and whether or not they're favorable or not favorable to what Christianity affirms, here where I live in Iowa, I'm actually started doing a six-part series on Christianity, true or false. And my first 2 weeks I'm spending talking about the case for God. I'll spend 2 weeks on the case for the Bible, and then I'll spend 2 weeks on the case for Jesus. And the way I began the lecture, and I'm pulling this up now on my iPad, is I gave a couple of quotes from a couple of examples of what kids face in the university. The first is Daniel Dennett. He's a professor at Tufts University, and he's a hardcore atheist. And he says
in
this,
fact,
quote,
he's one of the new atheists for my audience who might not know better. He wrote the book Breaking the Spell.
Yes. So he would be not as well known as Dawkins or Hitchens or Sam Harris, but he's part of that same ilk. And he said this, Nick, quote, they will see me as just another liberal professor trying to cajole them out of some of their convictions, and they are dead right about that. And that's what I am, and that's exactly what I'm trying to do. And then I go to the late Richard Rorty. He's since deceased, but he was a professor of philosophy at Princeton. And Rorty said, we try to arrange things so that students who enter as bigoted, homophobic, religious fundamentalists will leave college with views more like our own. So we are going to go right on trying to discredit you in the eyes of your children, trying to strip your fundamentalist religious community of dignity, trying to make your views seem silly rather than discussable, close quote. So there you have it. They're not holding back. These are university professors who are going out of their way, as it were, to try to undermine the faith that people have in Jesus Christ, and we are there to give the other side.
You know, what's really sad also is the side that we're opposed against, they're incredibly weak. And one great example of this I see is when I'm engaging with internet atheists who think they're just giving me some of the most brilliant arguments out there they can, and I'm thinking, you really can't think that's a real argument for your position, can you?
Yeah, it's like they're in philosophy 101 in the first 2 weeks, and they think they've discovered something that is going to undermine Christianity. It's like, you know, they need to go back for a little more seasoning, because their sophistry, their arguments are usually fairly lame. And there are some who have more sophistication, and those have to be dealt with. But, yeah, that's a very common thing. They take one philosophy class. In fact, I remember one person who took one university class, and then he's looking at the New Testament, he looks at the Gospel of John and says, that's Q. So I think, so what is Q, and how do you know that's Q? So they have no idea what they're talking about. And of course, those who Q sermon, where Quella refers to the alleged source behind the Gospel of Mark, who many people think is prior to Luke and Matthew, blah, blah, blah. This felt like just new to sound, to really know, it's kind of ignorant. But we nonetheless graciously try to point out that you're holding the wrong half of a half-truth. And if you went and took the next semester, you would probably find out a little bit more. But nonetheless, we run into this all the time, don't we? Yeah.
Yeah, what I tell people is, I mean, I recently wrote a review of a very, very bad book along these lines. Someone can go to my blog, and if they want to find out more, I've chosen to not dignify it by naming it on the air, but there's a book on arguing against the existence of God and even the existence of Jesus, and I saw Richard Carrier quoted numerous times in there, and so many atheists on the internet think that he's just the leading edge of New Testament scholarship. Just, you go to institutes of higher learning overseas and such, they don't even know who you're talking about if that.
Well, it's like I watched a National Geographic program about a month ago, and I taped it, fortunately. I've got the evidence. And in that show, they're talking about how Constantine radically influenced the New Testament canon, determining what books at Nicaea were going to go in. And this is National Geographic putting this on television. And anybody who has taken the time to even begin to study Nicaea knows it had nothing to do with the canon, with the Bible. The primary issue was the Trinity. You had the Arians and Arius of Alexandria there, and Semi-Arians, and the people who were like Athanasius holding forth the Orthodox position. Had nothing to do with the canon. But this is on television. And so you see this promulgated, and ultimately where that came from, that great theologian by the name of Dan Brown, who wrote the Da Vinci Code, who, and I say that tongue-in-cheek, Dan Brown's clueless, would never debate anybody on the reliability of the New Testament or the New Testament canon or so-called lost gospels, because he's essentially clueless. He's not a scholar, but yet this makes it on television, makes me want to scream at the television screen. So, yeah, there is a lot out there, Nick, that palms itself off as scholarship, when in fact it's not. And even secularists will acknowledge that there are really some bad arguments against God and bad arguments against Jesus and the Bible that need to be abandoned.
Actually, I think it goes further back than Dan Brown. It's my understanding that Thomas Paine made the same arguments back in his time.
Yeah, and most of the arguments, in fact, I'd have to say, you know, all the skeptical arguments, they've been around for quite a while. I mean, David Hume wasn't the first one to question miracles. And so people come up with these ideas and they figure, boy, I've discovered something here that's stunning. Bart Ehrman is not the first guy to question the New Testament documents and to talk about the sources of the Gospels. Now, these people have to be answered, and indeed we have been answering people like that, but they're not the first and won't be the last. These are not new objections, and Christianity has always put forth good arguments to respond, as well as the positive evidence. Unfortunately, our good responses aren't making as good a television, so you won't see a positive presentation for the case of the resurrection by Michael Lacona or somebody who's studied that area who believes Jesus rose from the dead. You only will see the skepticism and somebody finds some bones in an ossuary in Palestine somewhere in Jerusalem and are these the bones of Jesus? You know, that's to sell. So people will watch it. They have to sensationalize it. Whereas the scholars, even if they don't believe Jesus rose from the dead, are going to roll their eyes saying, oh, no, not that again.
Mm-hmm. We're here with John Stewart of Ratio Christi International. We'll be back after this break.
Check out CYIWorldwide.com. CYIWorldwide.com, home of Grok Radio. Free music downloads, advice, prayer, and support. CYIWorldwide.com. Do you grok?
Are you tired of the same old corporate Christian music on the radio? Check out Music Surge on Grok Radio, playing Christian music that doesn't suck. Download episodes now at CYIWorldwide.com.
And we're back with John Stewart of Ratio Christi. Our call-in number is 714-242-5180. Let's talk about the international thing. You're the in charge of the international office. You're the director of that, right?
Yeah, that's it. So I would be, the title is International Director for Ratio Christi. So I'm helping coordinate the campus ministries in countries outside the U.S., and right now we have a whole lot of interest from probably at least 20 countries. And so it's happening rather quickly. And part of what we'll be doing also is for, especially for people who are involved in Ratio Christi, is we'll be sending short-term apologetic mission teams to go to these countries. We'll put on these events. We'll spread out and speak in churches and colleges, Bible schools, etc. And to either start new chapters or to help build up existing chapters. And then one of the problems also is in the United States, even on a secular university, there's usually an opportunity for a club, be it a Ratio Christi club, a Christian club, to be recognized as a campus club, which provides also some benefits where they can rent facilities for dirt cheap compared to the going rate, oftentimes 10% of what it would cost the public. They get publicity, they get lots of perks, and that's a nice thing. And typically, you have a faculty sponsor, and Ratio Christi would have a director from Ratio Christi who would run the meetings. In some other countries, Nick, such things don't exist. If you go to the United Kingdom, they often have organizations that are Christian, but they don't meet on campus and are not officially recognized. And so the daunting thing is that we have, 180 or so countries in the world. Every country may have its own laws or its own ways of doing things. And, of course, in some countries, to get into those countries, I'm not sure we'd even be welcome to try to take this to a university, for example, in Saudi Arabia. So we're really starting with the ones that are the easiest ones to get into, and many in Africa, some in South America, Canada, of course, United Kingdom, Australia, New Zealand. So we are in the process of creating chapters of university campuses there, and a lot of times these are established by bringing in some great apologists to do the big meetings, and from that, the interest that is generated, then we'll plug that right into a new campus chapter.
What does this really mean for us? Why should people really care about Ratio Christi is going international?
Well, from the standpoint of evangelism, since apologetics is a species of evangelism, since Jesus did tell his disciples that we're to make disciples of all nations, this is part of the commission that he gave to the disciples in Matthew 28:19-20. So when Ratio Christi is here in the U.S. on campuses reaching out to kids who've being challenged with their faith, this is excellent. This is great. This is on our own backyards. But why are we letting the rest of the world, letting secularism make its inroads? We can stop it in its tracks. We can bring the positive message of hope through Christ to these universities, and we can perhaps in many ways prevent some of the skepticism that has taken root in America in the last 30 years or so. If we get on these university campuses and have a foothold there, build a beachhead. So people ought to be interested for those reasons. And it also gives opportunities for the budding apologists who are getting their degrees, like you and others, to give them opportunities, not just in the U.S., but even internationally. And some people have burdens for countries, perhaps because of their ancestry, or maybe they discovered, they studied the language, whether it be French or German or Swahili, and so they have a burden for a particular country. Well, as apologists, the opportunities are there to take that burden for a particular country or region and begin establishing university chapters of Ratio Christi so that Christianity at the intellectual level will not be neglected, and that some of the movers and shakers who run in those circles will realize that you can be an outspoken Christian and be in government or be in law or be in medicine or be in entertainment or whatever it might be, and they shouldn't have to back down because the evidence is on the side of the Christian.
I know what you mean about having a heart for a particular country. My own wife had once said she, one of the options she would have for marrying someone in ministry was she would really like it if they were a missionary to Japan. She loves pretty much everything Japanese, and one of the things we pray for every night in is Japan, because that is a great culture that we could get the gospel into, because it has such an enormous impact on the world, and we don't seem to be doing as much as we could. But with going international, we're reaching not only them, but several countries, and in fact reaching the colleges where the minds are being shaped and we can have the most influence.
Nick, we do have our eyes on Japan and China and Asia, India. Right now we're even working on bringing a team to India, and I've been there twice to teach apologetics, and the interest is great. The opposition is fierce, though. Of all people who should be tolerant of Christians should be the Hindus, because they have 300 million gods, and it's supposed to be anything goes. But in reality, the Hindus are very hostile toward Christianity in many parts of India, and even though the statistics officially say that India is 2% Christian, well, it's under the radar. It's probably over 10, and perhaps as high as 15% of a billion people are Christians. Some of the largest churches in Asia, if not the world, are actually in India, in places like Madras, which is now called Chennai, and I've been there to teach. And when I was up in northern India, only about 100 miles from the Pakistan border, there are very few Christians up there, but the ones who are there, they are dug in, and they are excited about being able to represent Christ. One in particular, and I can't even remember his name now, but there, he's in a video on the internet where these Hindu young thugs put neckerchiefs around their faces, went in with sticks, and beat him, and it was being filmed. And some of these kids end up going to jail over it. Here's this pastor who opens up his home as a place of prayer for people to come and pray to the God of creation. They came in, broke things, beat him severely. He comes outside with blood running down, and he's praying for the people who persecuted him. I thought, what a great video. And I have to think of his name and find it out and mention that for you. And when I found out that I was teaching a man like that, I felt like I'm so humbled that I come from America, a place of privilege, to teach someone like you who has experienced more persecution in just that one 15-minute encounter than I ever have and probably ever will in my whole life. So these are my heroes of the faith, Nick, the people who are in those areas that are so hostile to the gospel, but yet they lovingly are telling people the truth in Christ, and people are responding. India, we're seeing great movements of evangelism and apologetics there. Thank God for that.
Yeah, we had Craig Keener come on. Miracles have taken place in India that have led to movements there. And when you mentioned Madras, I remember that Ravi Zacharias said he was born in a town not too far from Madras. And historically, we're told Madras is where the Apostle Thomas went after the resurrection. He died there for Christianity.
That's right. You're a good historian, Nick. Yeah, there's actually a church of St. Thomas that's there in Chennai. It used to be called Madras. And, yeah, there's an interesting tradition there about that. What's interesting, too, is a little side story. When I was there teaching in Chennai, I actually went to, I think I either went or I called over to the headquarters of Ravi Zacharias that's there in Chennai, which I think is probably where the area where he grew up, and found out at the very moment that I was there in India trying to see if I could go say hello to Ravi, he was actually in California speaking, being introduced by my brother Don at Calvary Chapel in Costa Mesa the very moment. I was wondering if he was there in India. Just kind of an irony that he was over here when we were over there. But what a great opportunity in India to see people come to Christ. A very needy country. And there's a lot of people in Ratio Christi who have a burden for that country. And I really believe very shortly we'll be putting together a apologetics mission team and start establishing chapters there in various cities. And what great open doors.
You know, as soon as you mentioned your brother named Don, I remember that Ravi talked about someone named Don on one of his shows one time who used to write Bible verses on the papers of his students when they were overseas in the war. They looked over those Bible verses. Was that your brother by any chance? Or?
What kind of classes would these be?
It might have been chemistry, I think. I don't remember for sure.
Would be my brother. My brother Don, he co-hosts a program with Chuck Smith for Calvary Chapel called Pastor's Perspective. And my brother Don's co-written some books with Josh McDowell, such as Answers and Reasons. So my brother's an apologist, Bible teacher, and that's what he does now. So definitely not chemistry. That's not his turf.
Okay, I was trying to remember, but you know, that's not like too much of a coincidence. Me, but you know, we do have a like field out there. Are we seeing any success internationally?
Well, when we were in South Africa with John Lennox, with the team, and a lot of folks who came from Southern Evangelical Seminary, I think the success is shown by the number of people who turned out. And part of that could be that, of course, John Lennox, by virtue of the fact that he's really put Richard Dawkins in his place and has written some great books about God's existence from the standpoint of scientists. But the turnout wasn't just because John Lennox is fairly well known, because he may not be in some circles. It's because the topic about God, and people want to know, they want the information, they want to be satisfied in their minds and hearts. And here comes John Lennox to tell some great stories and anecdotes, and as he's just very affable and easy to listen to and delightful, but yet he got so serious when he explained how the naturalist, the materialist, cannot explain how the information gets into those cells and the DNA, and it goes on and on to talk about that and how science can't turn a blind eye toward the creator, because all the evidence points to the universe began, and it's the anthropic principle that it was prepared for us. So when you ask about success internationally, to me, that's evidence of the need internationally, and the success is the more we are going to be able, and a lot of that's going to depend on having the funds to do it and the people to go, to put on events, and to establish Ratio Christi chapters. But the need is there. The success is going to follow the need by people answering the call. And when I mention funds, you know, Nick, when we talk about the universities in the United States, it's a whole different ball game, where people come from sometimes fairly affluent situations and they take out their loans for college, or sometimes their parents help them, whatever it might be, or they get scholarships. In other countries, I mean, when I go to places like Kenya and I do ministry in Nairobi, and I know most people there live on $2-3 a day, and to have the means to actually pay to go to school, for some, it's extraordinary. So a lot of times what we really need also are those who believe in what we're doing and will help us fund the ministry we're doing and support and donate to Ratio Christi International, so that we can take the gospel free of charge to them and set up campus ministries there. So part of the success will be dependent on can we raise the awareness to get the right people to go over there? Can we get the funding to send full-time missionaries to some of these countries? Can we have the economic means to do what we have the opportunities to do? And we're believing God that He is going to supply all of our needs according to His riches and glory. But we always like to also let people know that it is a team effort. And the apologists who are trained, who have a heart's desire for a particular country, they need the means to be able to go over there and do that. And so whether somebody works for, let's say, Wycliffe or some other missionary organization the same way, Ratio Christi apologists need people who believe in the work we're doing and will help stand with them in prayer and financial support so that they can go and meet the need in those other countries. So, yes, the success will be driven by us responding to the needs, and the needs are definitely there.
We'll be talking about financial support in our next segment, but I did find it very revealing how you talk about how people would come just because of a topic. And I've wanted to go up to so many pastors here in America and say, look, if you want people to come to your church and hear the gospel, do something with apologetics. Announce your church is going to host a debate, for instance, and you will have the church filled up with people before too long.
Yep. It, absolutely true. And I've debated at university campuses.
We heard you say you debated at university campuses.
Sorry, I heard a beep. I've debated in university campuses. I debated in different venues, television and radio. To me, it's exciting. Not everybody's cut out to be a debater, but for those who had the opportunity, my only comment would be, if you're going to do debates, do your homework. Be ready. Because the least convincing thing is the truth told unconvincingly. We need to be able to, as when I taught last year, about this time last year, actually it was in November last year in Nigeria. Now you talk about a country that where you're challenged. Nigeria has the highest body count of any country in the world when it comes to Christians being killed because they're Christians. Last year was over 800 because of the Muslim group Boko Haram. And in Nigeria last year, as I'm kind of losing my train of thought here. Oh, but talking about being ready and doing our homework ahead of time so you can go into the lion's den. And if we've done our homework, we can tell the truth convincingly. Oh, now I know how I remembered and thought of Nigeria. I actually taught some Christian leaders there on apologetics, and the heading was called Reason, Evidence, and Persuasion, Apologetics as a Model for Biblical Evangelism. Because in the New Testament, we see the model of the Apostle Paul. He uses reasoning, he uses evidence, but he also uses persuasion. We want people to accept what we're saying. We don't want to just throw it out there and hope that it sticks. We want to convince them. And so learn techniques on how to be most persuasive in encapsulating the message for the existence of God or the reliability of the Bible, the resurrection of Jesus. And the more we can do that, the more we'll feel confident to respond to people who ask questions and maybe even engage in a formal debate publicly. But if you're going to debate, do your homework first. Make sure you're ready so that you can present a good case for Christianity.
Yeah. Any pastors out here that are listening, like if you want your church before people who are eager to do evangelism, who aren't afraid, who really take their faith seriously, I don't think there's much any better way you can do it than start letting them have apologetics training going on in the church.
Yep. This is so true, Nick, so true. And with pastors' busy schedules, with so many other things going, mm-hmm. seeming like sermon content, it seems like it's too easy to just be a little Dr. Phil, and your sermons are, you know, how to get along with your mother-in-law. Well, you know, talking on relational issues is important, but if that's all people are getting, good heavens, we need much more than that. We need to have a balanced diet, and that includes, if you look at the New Testament, Nick, how much of the New Testament is apologetic? So much of it is apologetic in its emphasis on giving reasons to the mind who is inquiring. So why would churches neglect that? And part of the reason is, the answer is, I talked about it earlier, because the pastors themselves have not been trained. I was talking on the series that I began last Wednesday here in Iowa that I'm teaching, and as I was promoting it a couple of weeks ago, I pointed down to my pastor, who's a graduate of Dallas Theological Seminary, and I said, so how many classes in apologetics did you have in seminary? He said, one. I said, that's one more than I had at Talbot Seminary. So I said, no wonder people aren't feeling comfortable to host debates or debate themselves or to teach apologetics. They haven't been trained. Well, we're changing that. And the universities and the seminaries that are now training apologists, they're the ones that are going to be helping us make a difference. And the graduates, we are going to plug them in. And maybe they'll be the ones that come to the churches for those pastors who are listening and do the debates. They've done their homework. And pastors, I would encourage you, do your own homework and study and learn as you go and teach your people the evidence for the Christian faith. And that way, there's a situation, and I think it's in Matthew chapter 11, Nick, and if I miss the chapter there, forgive me, but I think it's in Matthew 11, where remember when John the Baptist has been imprisoned and he's about ready to be beheaded?
And yes, Matthew 11.
Yeah, he sends word to Jesus, and he says, so are you the one, or shall we look for someone else? And Jesus gives his great response. He quotes Isaiah, you know, go tell John this. But think about John the Baptist. Here's the guy who in John 1:29 says, behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world. And he says, I'm not worthy to unlace his sandals. He must increase, I must decrease. And here's John the Baptist, the forerunner, yet he's asking these questions. Are you the one? Well, he's the one that saw the dove descending and heard the voice from heaven.
Yep.
John knew in his heart, but he wanted intellectually to hear some confirmation before he died, before he lost his head. It's like, could I just get a little reassurance, a little confirmation? And you know, Nick, I think that's a human trait. I mean, if I were preaching the gospel in Nigeria or in Iowa or anywhere in the world, and someone said, I'm going to kill you, and they got their gun out or whatever they got out, at that point, I may look up and say, Lord, give me a peace about this. Confirm that this is your will. So I think it's a very human thing that when we are challenged in various areas or we're facing death, even if we've been taught everything so well, Lord, give me a little reassurance. And I think that's what we see there. And Christians need reassurance, pastors need reassurance, and non-Christians need to be told of the evidence that we have. It is satisfying to the heart and to the mind to know that these things are true.
We're going to take our next break, and we'll be back after this. We're talking with John Stewart, the International Director of Vascio Christi. I'm Nick Peters. We'll be back after this break.
Hey, this is Minister Grock. Thanks for listening. Although Grock Radio is free, there are costs to upkeep the website, podcast, and purchase Bibles and materials for street ministry. And while we are happy to pay this ourselves out of pocket, we will gladly accept any gifts if you feel led to support the shows and our street ministry. You could send a gift or love offering through our website at cyiworldwide.com. Thanks for your support, and God bless.
And I'd like to remind people of donations that this is a listener-supported program, that Blog Talk Radio is supported through you, and People Waters, our ministry, is supported through you as well. And you can make donations through deepwaters.wordpress.com, through tectonics.org, through risenjesus.com. Yeah, we got several places. And, of course, through the Vascio Christi Issues and Answers chapter. And let's talk about donating to Vascio Christi entirely. First off, why is it that people should donate to Vascio Christi? Where is their money going when they donate to Vascio Christi?
Well, the money is going, for the most part, to directly support particular missionary apologists who are on university campuses. So people have the opportunity, if they know someone who is a Vascio Christi director, to donate directly to their support through the website. And they can go on the Vascio Christi website, which is www.vasciochristi.org. That's RATIOCHRIST.org. They can go on there. if they want to support the ministry in general. So, for example, we have a lot of expenses internationally to be able to do what we need to do, the legal work. So, for example, in Canada, if we want our people in Canada to be able to donate to campus missionaries, their apologists who are full-time, and have that be tax-deductible, we have to establish what's called a registered charity. And to establish a registered charity in Canada costs about $9,000 when you add in the legal costs, and that's probably on the low side. And so this is true of other countries. If we want to be formally recognized by the country so that people within Canada can donate, then we have to go that route. So there are various expenses that way. And then, of course, the travel expenses, getting from one place to another, and to have people who assist us in trying to direct the ministry, there's a tremendous amount of expense. So we're always looking for people who have the vision and can identify with what we're doing, and to help us with the growth that I've already talked about on your show, Nick, that it's the fields are white for harvest. The interest is there. Now we just need to get the people to be able to do this. And there may be opportunities where chapters may need to have support from the U.S. because they can't support a missionary in a particular, let's say, an African country from Africa, from their own town. So they have to go outside. And truly, this is how we're going to be able to place people. And so people who are working for Ratio Christi, nobody's getting rich. If anything, they're not even getting bills paid. So most of us are doing this without any pay and hoping that sometimes our expenses get reimbursed, but we believe so greatly in the cause. So I would say that if people specifically would like to support the international arm of Ratio Christi, go to the website and you can donate. Just make sure you specifically indicate that you want it for Ratio Christi International, because we have a separate fund that will help our international efforts. So make sure at some point you indicate Ratio Christi International, and then that way that'll help us with the expenses of doing what we're doing so we can reach our goals.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about a lot of people doing the work here, and they're not getting rich. They're not even able to pay their bills that way. Yeah, right here, speaking. Okay.
You can relate to that. Right, Nick. Yeah. And, of course, go ahead.
And what I've even said was that when I came on here, I was told that we have 20,000 listeners overall. I mean, we don't get that many listeners every episode, unfortunately. I wish we did. But I've said before on here that if we had 20,000 listeners and each of them donated $1 a year to People Waters, I wouldn't be worrying about bills. And I would be, yep, we've got enough. We can keep doing this ministry work full time. Very, very easy. It really doesn't take much, does it?
No, it doesn't at all. And for me, as a lawyer, I still work some of my cases, my practice is in California, but that's my tent making. So just like Paul in Corinth made tents so he wasn't a burden, and at some point, if Ratio Christi can help me out to the point where I don't have to do any more law work other than anything I donate through the Alliance Defending Freedom, I'm excited about that. But just like in other countries, Nick, we have people who are raising money so they can be missionaries for Ratio Christi in other countries. In some cases, they'll go to these countries and even work there part-time or even full-time, and then, in addition, do the ministry. So there are opportunities where even if people can raise part-time support with a part-time employment at their target country, they might be able to sooner get there and spend as much time as they can doing the work of apologetics and evangelism. So I would encourage those people who, I say there are two types of people, Nick, when it comes to reaching out to those, to reaching out to do ministry outside the U.S. There are the goers and there are the givers, the goers and the senders. The senders are the ones who donate, who support with prayer and money so that the goers, the people who are actually going out there, can do what they believe God has called them to do. And we have way more senders than we do have goers. And it's supposed to be that way. Not, we can't have millions of missionaries. Well, maybe we could, but we don't. But we do have enough that need and deserve support. So if people are listening and they don't have that burden to go out and do ministry in foreign countries, well, you know what? You can send somebody, and you will be part of that ministry, part of that team, by virtue of making it possible. So the blessing has to be spread around. It's not when I go to a place, let's say I was in Nigeria last year and Kenya last year and South Africa this year, I don't get all the blessing. It's the people who help support me by helping to pay for the expenses of travel and lodging to do that we share that blessing. And believe me, it is a team. And some people have the gift of making money, and they should help share that with the people who are called to do ministry. So I'll encourage your listeners, Nick, if there are that many people listening who would just even a dollar a year, although I would encourage you to do better, this is a great show, and it's an opportunity for people to hear, I think, some of the leading voices for Christian apologetics in America today. So I would encourage them to support your ministry as well, Nick.
Yeah, it really disappoints me that so many people out there, like, say, Joel Osteen, who's out there teaching fluff, and sometimes I'd say outright heresy to the people, is doing so well off. And those of us who are the apologists this year, we're the ones who are struggling. And I'm looking and saying, look, your future in Christianity depends on whether or not Christianity is going to be intellectually defensible. We are the front lines, and we need to be supported while we're out there. And it's just so sad to see the ways the church wastes what it has today, financially and in other ways, instead of making the most of what it's got.
Yes, there's plenty of resources, and there's fierce competition for the evangelical dollar. I'm on the board of a large Christian conference center up in Seattle, Washington, actually the chairman of the board, Camp Baraka, and we're always looking for new funding sources, for example, for that to help do deferred maintenance and so forth. And it just isn't sexy to people to think, well, to donate, to fix a roof at a camp. But when they realize that the camp facility is a vehicle to change the lives and bring the gospel to young kids, as 3,000 per year go through there every summer, then they start to get the idea that you need a facility. One thing at Rasher Christie we do not need is facilities. We are not a brick and mortar ministry. We work out of our home offices. We don't put money into that. We put money into people, into lives, into ministry. You will not see a Rasher Christie headquarters with some fancy building, no edifice. You're only going to see people doing the work and spreading the gospel as best as we can. And we want to keep it that way. That's what Rasher Christie is about, not building an organization that sucks in money to build a building, but organization that can take in money to help present the gospel intelligently all over the world.
Yeah. Give an example. I mean, this show that we're doing, you're calling right from your home, aren't you?
I am calling from my home here in Iowa, right.
And right now, I'm doing this show straight from my home right here in Tennessee. I don't have to leave anywhere. If I'm doing my missions work for Rasher Christie, I just get up, turn on my computer. It's right there, since my chapter is the only one that's pretty much the overhead internet chapter.
Hey, and that's great.
I can do this all right here so very easily from my own home. And, you know, people, when we're telling you to support this cause financially, but in the Bible, God told the people not to test him. But yet, when you go to Malachi 3, he talks about them not bringing in the offerings and the gifts. And he says, this one time, test me in this. He's challenging them, essentially. He's daring them, saying, if you do this, I will pour out a blessing on you. Now, I'm not talking anything like a hundredfold return of TBN or such, but just like, God, I'm going to trust you that if I give to ministry, that you will support me. Of course, I'm asking you to give everything. Trust me, no one here is going to say, mail in your Social Security checks, unlike certain other businesses that would do that. I'm going to say, give what you can and trust God the rest, and just realize what we are doing here is something you want to support, or you should want to support.
Amen. And in using things like a home office and internet technology to reach people, I mean, what a great thing. We're using updated technology and means, which is as inexpensive as it gets, so you don't have to spend a whole lot of money to buy radio time or television time. And, man, I know about that. I started doing Christian talk radio back in the mid-1980s, so I've seen it all. Mm-hmm. And it's exciting, though, to see some of these less expensive alternatives. And the proof's in the pudding. If you have a lot of listeners, people are hungry for this. And to continue going, that means people need to pitch in a little bit. And Paul talked about that. Communicate to those to teach the word to you and all good things, which basically means pay those folks who are blessing you and teaching you the word. And indeed, there's plenty to go around if people would be generous. Second, talks about God loves a cheerful giver. The Greek word is hilarion, one who gives willingly, not grudgingly or out of compulsion. No one's compelled to give. But when you realize that lives aren't being changed and that people who otherwise would be casualties of secularism are having a renewed faith because of the existence of Rash of Christi, people like Nick and the international arm of Rash of Christi, you're really investing in lives. And these are things that this is an eternal reward in this, and that's why it's exciting. I just couldn't see doing anything else.
Yeah, when I'm encouraging people, and you did get a little bit broken up there, John, that's one, but when I'm encouraging people, what I would tell them is go with, you can get a family album, look at pictures of your children, and realize they are at stake. I mean, that's what you even say, well, my children aren't going to go to college. You know what? They're still at stake. Why? Because they're going to be encountering these ideas, and it is better that we inoculate them beforehand rather than have to deal with them afterwards. You know, I was talking with a good friend, and I had a pastor call me suddenly, and I started talking to him about apologetics, and he said, no, I'm not interested in that right now. And I went back to my friend and told him my disappointment. He said, he's going to call you back in about a year and a half when his son comes home from college and announces that he's abandoned the Christian faith.
Yes, that's true. Indeed, it apologetics is an inoculation to skepticism and secularism. It's a prophylaxis to protect from the fiery darts of the enemy. And, I mean, you can do it one of two ways. Either you can isolate and lock your kids into the attic for 20 years, chain them to the bed, and then when they're finally discovered, what do you find? They're raving lunatics because they never had any type of balance. Or what you can do is carefully give them age-appropriate information and discussions, give them the facts and the evidence so that they are ready. You don't tell a kid, here's the keys to the car, till you're sure that they understand how to step on the brake and how to drive it. So to send kids out to the university, are they ready? Are they ready intellectually, emotionally, and morally? And parents need to prepare their kids to do just that. And otherwise, just to use the car analogy, there's going to be a big collision. And these parents are going to be knocked off their feet when their kids come home with strange ideas, strange practices, and worse. So you're right. So it's time now to give the attention where it's needed, and that is from the earliest ages to train kids on understanding, not just learning Bible verses, but learning why we believe that this is the Word of God, why we believe the precepts of Scripture are from the Lord, why we believe these things. So it's the why question. It's the evidence. That's why when I give a seminar or a series, I try to do it like a courtroom, and I say, you're the jury, and we need a verdict, the Latin word verdictum, which means to say the truth, veridictum, I should say, mispronounced it. So we need to look at that the world is like the jury. They want to understand, what's truth? And Pilate asked that question, what is truth? You see it in the movie, A Few Good Men. You can't handle the truth. I'd rather refer to Jesus, who said, I am the truth. We have it, Nick, and we need to disseminate it. And the church has been doing a lousy job. It's not a recrimination. It's just to say we can do better, and now we know how we can do better by bringing apologists in to teach, by teaching our churches the defense of the faith, evidence for the faith, to teach them how to defend the techniques of persuasion, reason, and evidence, and also to set up the debates and let people see firsthand as the position of Christianity is challenged by a skeptic, and let's see where the truth lies, and let people may the best argument win. And I'm not afraid of that. If truth is on our side, then we'll open ourselves up to any scrutiny possible. We'll answer any question we possibly can answer. Some, Nick, we may not have great, perfect answers for everybody, but I'll tell you, for the most part, we've got really solid turf to stand on. And God has not told us everything. He didn't tell us how he created the universe, but he told us that he created this earth and he peopled it so that he could have a relationship with his creation, his human beings, the crown of creation. And when we fell into sin through our ancestors, he sent the remedy also in the person of Jesus. That's the story, and the evidence backs that up. And science now backs up with the anthropic principle. This universe, it's as if it knew we were coming, to quote one physicist. The universe was equipped and prepared and created by the intelligent designer so that we could inhabit this planet and we could understand and hear the propositional truth of the gospel, that God became flesh in the person of Jesus Christ, went to the cross to bear our sins, and rose from the dead as proof that what he did on the cross will be effective for us if we put our trust in him. There's the message. That's the life-changing message, and that is the hope of the world.
Before we go to our last break, right quick, remind my listeners how they can donate.
Go to our website, Ratio Christi, www.ratiochristi.org, and when you click on when it talks about donate, make sure as you donate you indicate if you want it to go to Ratio Christi International, and you can just send it to Ratio Christi, but we have a designated fund that is reserved for the international work. So they should indicate on the checks, and you can get the address for Ratio Christi from the website. And if you send in a check, please put in international, and then that way it'll be routed properly to the right account. And there's an account number that I have somewhere that's not at my fingertips, but I think if you put international on a check, that will get to our international arm. And please, we encourage people to go look at the website because it'll tell you a lot about what's going on. You can see the bios of the directors and the president, myself, and some of our regional directors. And you'll see the quality of people on our board, for example. And it'll help people see the magnitude of the ministry that God has given us and some of the goals and ideas we have for the future as well.
Okay, well, we're going to take our final break, come back, and we'll be wrapping things up. I'm Nick Peters. My guest is John Stewart. We're talking about Ratio Christi International. We'll be back after this break.
Oh, yeah. Hey, folks, it's Will ZPI, and you guys got to check out CYIWorldwide.com, home of the Grok Show, free MP3s, music, advice, and even prayer support. That again is CYIWorldwide.com. Check it out.
I'm Nick Peters. This is the Deeper Waters Podcast. We're here with John Stewart of Ratio Christi International. We're getting ready to just wrap things up here. We got about 17 minutes left in the show. And, you know, I just really wish more and more people would find out just how important it is to be doing apologetics work out here. That you talk about how our church sermons are usually Dr. Phil. All we're doing in most of our church services is we're going out there and we're telling people how to be good people. But you can do that with a psychology course or a philosophy course. But we're trying to make Christian people. We're trying to give them the gospel, but something that you can't get just from psychology or philosophy. And we're selling our people short if all we're doing is just telling them how to be good people.
Oh, I would agree, Nick. Yeah, the gospel is more than that. We're told, Jesus said, if anybody wants to come after me, follow after me. And he said, come and learn of me. We're supposed to follow Jesus and emulate Jesus, and we're supposed to be his hands and arms, reaching out with his love. And that love is summarized in what he did, and which was to die for our sins and to tell people that they too can be set free. We have the antidote. I like to equate it to a snake bite. Having been in Africa many times, they have one of the nastiest snakes in the world, the black mamba. Black mamba, if it bites you, pretty much you're dead. Unless you're standing right next to some place that has some anti-venom that they can perhaps use to save your life. But everybody who's born into this world has been bitten by the snake bite of sin, that black mamba. And the only antidote, that only anti-venom, is the shed blood, the sacrifice of Jesus Christ on the cross. That's what Christianity is about. That's why the cross is the symbol, because it's at the cross the promises of God come to fruition and we're set free. There's two things you can do that will lead you to an eternal separation from God. One is to reject the antidote to the snake bite. You've been bit by the mamba, and you're going to die. But so if you reject it and say, I don't want that or I don't need that, sorry, but the consequences are going to happen. You will die. Or you could take that antidote, the anti-venom that someone hands you, and say, well, that looks kind of bitter. I think I'll add a little bit of this and take a little bit of this out and make it a little more palatable to my taste buds. But by adulterating it, by changing the antidote, you're also at risk of dying. So what we need to do is to realize that Christianity is the unadulterated, pure teaching of God through his prophets, and especially through Jesus Christ, that we're sinners, and the only way that our sins can be removed is by trusting in Christ and his finished work on the cross. That's the gospel. From that, we can learn how to love one another. Indeed, we can learn how to have great relationships. But it always goes back to, why are we even here, Nick? Why are we a cosmic accident, or is there purpose from God? And indeed, he has purpose for us being here. And he's told us that purpose in the scripture. He's revealed it so that we don't have to guess whether or not we're a cosmic mistake. We're here for a reason. We're here to have fellowship with God, to know him and enjoy him forever, as the Westminster Catechism says. So we need to know that the simple gospel has to be proclaimed, and not get caught up in the fluff of religion and religiosity. Get back to the basics of what New Testament Christianity is. And I think we're seeing that. And in some ways, secularism has forced us to either shape up or ship out, either stand up for Jesus or deny him, but don't put one foot in Egypt and one in the promised land. That double-minded man is unstable. You have to make your decision. Are you with Jesus or are you against Jesus? And if you're with him, I guarantee there's enough evidence that even the most inquiring mind will be satisfied with the evidence that supports that God who created the universe is the God who became flesh in the person of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, what people just don't realize is if we make this all about just being a good person instead of a truth claim, that the early church faced persecution on a regular basis. They didn't die because they were just being good people. They were being controversial in their society. And Jesus did not get on that cross because he was being Mr. Rogers. Jesus was making waves in his society. And if we are not making waves in our society, if we're not changing it in any way, we're not really doing what Jesus said we should be doing.
The old statement that I think Tertullian, who I like because he was also a lawyer, said is that the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church. And when Christianity is not challenged and not persecuted, we get fat and sassy. When we're challenged and persecuted, we have to toughen up to endure. If you go to a place where there's a lagoon, you go to the Great Barrier Reef or a place in Hawaii where there's a reef that's blocking the waves, and if you go into that little lagoon that's not being hit by waves, you can go find starfish, and although they might be an endangered species and protected, but if you wanted to pluck one off of the rocks, very easy. Just reach down, pull it off. Now, if you go over to the other side where the waves are crashing on the ocean side of the lagoon, try to pull a starfish off one of those rocks. You can't. They're holding on for dear life. adversity creates strength. Adversity creates the ability to withstand and to be in a placid, nice little lagoon. When the church is fat and sassy and content and not challenged, the church doesn't do its work. But when there is persecution, when I go to a place like Nigeria where everybody I taught there knows somebody who's been killed or attempted to be killed for their faith, when I go to a place like that, my first day there, we go through 21 armed checkpoints just to get to the capital or from the capital to Jos. When I see that the streets are blocked off because it was Sunday, and the reason they blocked the streets off is because terrorists otherwise would drive bombs into their churches. When I see those Christians and they're there at church, despite the risks, I say there is a healthy, strong church. That's what America needs, the rest of the world needs, Nick. And God forbid that it's going to come from some type of physical persecution. Right now, it's more of an intellectual and cultural persecution that if we stand up for biblical values, we're going to be seen as, well, you name, put the name out there, bigot, homophobe, whatever it might be for standing up for what we believe is truth. But that could increase and intensify. But if it does, the Christians will stand up, and I believe the church will get stronger. So whether persecution, rampant persecution, is coming in greater waves to America, I don't know. I can't predict that. It could. But I'll tell you, when the church is not being challenged, we get too soft. And that's why in the other countries, we could learn from them on how to stand up for Christ in the midst of persecution. And again, those are my heroes, the ones who live on a daily basis under the threat death because of nothing other than the fact that they believe Jesus is their Savior. Those are my heroes.
Mike Lacona was recently in Indonesia, which is about 99% Muslim, and he was giving apologetics talks at their organization, and these people would come and listen for 6 hours to talk about apologetics. And I'm looking at them, I can hardly get people to pay attention for half an hour over here. And I suspect that when the secular survivor over there with Bart Ehrman's material and all these others, the church in Indonesia is going to be ready. Our churches aren't as ready.
Yep. When I on the website, my wife and I created a ministry, and we have a website that's called Rolling Stone Ministries, and we're making the transition to Ratio Christi. But people can look at my blogs there if they want, but it's rollingstoneministries.org, and that's from the stone was rolled away, the empty tomb. But on our website there, and I'm sure the same thing's happened with Ratio Christi, I'd say at least monthly, if not weekly, we get inquiries from places like India and Tanzania and Africa saying, could you please come? Nick, the need is there. As you say, here we got Bible bookstores all over the place, churches on every corner, and we don't even use the materials and resources we have. Over there, they're hungry. To even get in their hands a book about apologetics is a big deal. So we are so blessed here. The question is, what are we doing with our blessings? Are we squandering them? And we're so fortunate. Men and women listening, be thankful that you're in America. We have so much going for us. To be a Christian in America is not that difficult. Yeah, you might be intellectually assaulted by people who are skeptical when they think that you have two brains, one's lost, the other's out looking for it because you believe the Bible. But believe me, we have so much materially and so many churches and good teachers. It's not that way in many places in the world. But we have an opportunity to bring to those people the same hope in Christ. And one book will be passed around to lots of folks. They don't go buy new books, pass it around. It's like the early church ran out of, you know, the original copies of Scripture, the autographs, probably got shredded within, you know, a decade because they were used. They were copied and passed around. So, yeah, all that to say that we are blessed here, and the church needs to get with it because we have so much opportunity that we're squandering.
We are sitting on a gold mine in America, really, and we could easily turn back the tide on secularism if we really tried to do it. If we made, each one of us made it our responsibility, if we donated to ministries like Ratio Christi that are wanting Jesus, we have the information, we have the means, Jesus. And what I've said on this show before is, I can't even imagine what the Apostle Paul would do with everything we have today if he had had it back then. And we would be held responsible if we do not use properly the resources that we have been given.
Yeah, that's true. And as I think about that, and I think about the need to infiltrate. And if 50 years ago, people's idea of ministry was either to be a foreign missionary or to be a pastor. Well, that is so limited. You can do ministry for Jesus as a nurse, as a doctor, as a lawyer, mm-hmm. as an accountant, as a bricklayer, as a homemaker. And what we're doing with Ratio Christi is going to probably, which is the breeding ground for so much secularism, the university, and on the secular's turf, we are challenging them and bringing back an intelligently presented gospel. Now, at the same time, we need Christians who know what they believe to go into media, television, radio, into law, into medicine, into education. We infiltrate that way. But our particular focus is we want apologists, so that if someone is a TV news anchor and is a believer, that they're going to know why they believe, and if they ever get the chance to be able to tell it intelligently. As a nurse, why are you a nurse? Because I believe, you know, God created us in his image. I want to save lives. Why do you believe that? And then they've been trained in apologetics. They can say all the reasons why, as an educator, for example. So apologetics goes into every area, and those who do this full-time to bring the level of understanding to people, it's a great opportunity, and the challenge is there, Nick. So what, regardless of the area of life we're in, we need to know what we believe, we need to know why we believe it, and be able to articulate that persuasively. So we have a ways to go. And people listening, if you can't do that, don't be daunted by that. Start somewhere and pick up a good book on apologetics. Start somewhere. Nickel, I'm sure, has resources he can tell you places to start. And you have to. The longest journey starts with one step. So to become more skilled in defending and proclaiming and explaining our faith, it's going to take some work. It's going to take some homework. And as my former colleague, the late Walter Martin, used to say, that most Christians on Sunday are afraid of being struck with a thought. They want to go into church, tune off their brain, hold their hands up, sing some songs, tune out a little bit of the sermon, and then hear the benediction, off they go, they've done their job. No, we need to think. We need thinking Christians. And the thinking Christian is probably the most fearful thing to the secularist, is a Christian who is thinking and who is trained. That's what we need, is more thinking Christians.
Yeah, and John's right. If someone wants to know more resources, go to my blog, deepwaters.wordpress.com. My email is right there. I'd be glad to give you some resources. But we've got about 3 minutes left. I'm going to let you all know that next week we're going to have 3 ex-homosexuals on the show. They're going to be telling me their stories, how they came out, and what difference they can make today, and anyone else can make today. So I hope you'll be tuning in. It's going to be a very interesting, very controversial show. But, hey, I'm used to that controversy. And so we've got about 2.5 minutes left. So if someone wants to get in touch with you, John, you talk about Rolling Stone Ministries. What else can they do if they want to find out more about you?
Well, my bio is on there's a brief bio of me on our Ratio Christi website. So they go to www.ratiochristi.org. And then if they go to our Rolling Stone Ministries website, www.rollingstoneministries.org, they'll see my bio, my wife's bio, a lot of the places where we've been. We've been to Africa 8 times in the last 6 years, and all the countries we've been to doing ministry, and some blogs. I have one called "Does Science Lead Us to God" that I think some of your listeners would be interested in. So that's a way to contact me, and if they're interested and curious about what I look like, there'll be a picture on both those websites. That may make them want to turn it off, but nonetheless. Nick, it's been delightful to spend time with you.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess he's gone for now, but I certainly thank him for being on the show and contributing what he has to say, and I hope you'll be supporting the ministry of Ratio Christi and, of course, the ministry of Deepa Waters as I do my own work through Ratio Christi. And for now, I'm going to be going ahead and signing off, and we'll see you next week when we talk with the Excellent Sexuars.